I am now the full, complete, and officially transitioned post-inspection owner.
Welcome to another episode of the Rogue Startups Podcast with Craig Hewitt and Dave Rodenbaugh. This is a podcast documenting the journey of self-funded business founders and sharing lessons, tips, and tricks for businesses following the same path as ours. The journey is long and winding, but we're glad you're joining us for it. And now it's time to go rogue with Dave and Craig.
All right. Welcome to episode 74 of Rogue Startups. Today is a big deal.
And the Lucasfilm attorneys come after us all at once.
No, I use less than 30 seconds. It's fair use.
No, it's classic. Have you seen the movie yet?
I have not seen Rogue One yet. So it's coming out on my birthday. Happy birthday to me. Thank you, JJ and the Lucasfilm companies and Disney and everybody for doing that on my birthday. That was really kind of you guys to do that.
Nice.
But no, we're probably going to go sometime between Christmas and New Year's is my guess. Although we've been looking at stuff about Rogue One online, and now I'm kind of like, oh, shit, I can't take my littler kids who got to go see Force Awakens, but it was definitely more family friendly. And now I guess the new one is like super war heavy. And my wife is like, oh, no, we're not taking them. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, I tried.
As long as I can see it with my oldest, I'm good.
Right.
We'll do them later when that's more age appropriate for them, but you know, yeah.
I've tried not to read too much about it because I want to go see it next week maybe, but I've definitely heard it's very war heavy and kind of brings the whole military part of the whole saga to light very clearly.
Well, I mean, something had to eventually, you know. It certainly wasn't Attack of the Clones. That was a little too cheesy, so I'm thinking that they probably are gonna create the true horrors of war picture here in the Empire.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
Well, speaking of horrors of war, can I just throw out a rant for a second?
Go for it.
So, one thing that I've been struggling with here this last week, in addition to the whole transition for the SaaS we'll talk about in a minute, but like we're coming down to a deadline here in the United States for your health insurance, December 15th. If you're in the open enrollment period right now, December 15th is your deadline. And every single year, without fail, my insurance has gotten more expensive, shittier, and more restrictive. And this year was no exception to that. In fact, this is the shittiest it has ever gotten ever. I had to go as an individual person from a PPO, which I've had for years and years and years, to an HMO.
Ooh, that's a big deal. Yeah.
Forcing me into an HMO just because I don't work for a company.
I thought that was the whole idea of Obamacare, was more open insurance for small companies and individuals and people with pre-existing conditions.
Hashtag fail.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, this totally screwed me this year. My insurance went up 20%. I have the same basic coverage that I had before. I have fewer doctors that I can go to. In fact, that was the big thing, is that I was struggling to find the doctors that we go to and which plan covered our doctors. And we didn't get all of our doctors. So, you know, I just had to go for the least bad scenario. Oh, such brain damage. And I was getting such conflicting information, like the search on the websites. Like there's some software engineers somewhere that need to be slapped at various insurance companies because their searches suck. They suck. You can't find anything in this stuff.
Well, the big rub is that like the private insurers are failing to participate in the state plans now, right? So it's a national mandate, but the states don't have anyone to provide the coverage, right? Isn't that what it is in some states now?
That's exactly what happened here in Colorado. Like we're down to three carriers. One was a brand new one this year, so everybody's – I mean, I'm looking at them going, what the hell do you cover? And I searched their site, and it turns out none of my doctors were covered. I called one of my kid's doctor's provider, and they were like, oh, well, we actually are on this thing. And I'm thinking to myself, how the hell am I going to know who's on and who's not if you're not telling me that right now, because this is open enrollment period. So I'm just so frustrated. I'm so mad about that whole thing.
Yeah, man, I hear you. Well, on our end, we you know, the politically there there's some quite a bit of craziness in the last 2 weeks here in Europe with the Italy sort of like you know, shutting down some big reform proposals, which they're saying is gonna basically take Italy out of the EU. France could be next, and then the Netherlands would be next, all in the next 2 years. So it's
holy shit. That's some, gotten buried in U.S. news this week. I mean, that would be major headlines on any other week, but with every crazy cabinet member that Trump is picking,
yeah,
everything gets buried in the news, and it's like, oh, here's how bad this person is, or here's how crazy this thing is, or here's the dumb thing that was said this week. It's just like you can't – you have to change news sources to find anything about anything besides Trump right now.
Yeah. It's amazing. Suck. It's amazing. Everywhere is amazing, I guess. Just the anyways, yeah. But so you and I have some exciting shit to talk about this week, huh?
I'll show you mine if you show me yours. That sounds so wrong when I said out loud. That sounds so wrong.
Mine is much smaller and less impressive now, but it has potential. No. So honestly, we sort of hinted at it last week, Dave, that you have some big news to talk about with acquiring a SaaS business.
I do. So I am now the full, complete, and officially transitioned post-inspection owner of Recapture.io, which is an abandoned cart email marketing solution specifically for Magento.
And so I'm a little familiar with Magento, but for everyone who might not know exactly what it is, kind of give the landscape of where Magento fits in the e-commerce world.
Sure. So there are like a gazillion and a half e-commerce providers out there. And there are some very large ones that you're probably very familiar with, especially if you're in WordPress, like WooCommerce. And there's big ones that I know you and I are familiar with because we have a lot of friends that work in this space, and they're Shopify. And another one that's been out there even longer than these guys have and has huge amount of market share is Magento. So they basically are a full open source e-commerce solution provider to help you build a store on your website. And the technology that it's built on is considerably older than the other solutions that are out there. So I think they're largely PHP and C-based, C++. I don't remember all the exact details of the underlying platform. But, you know, it's in some sense, it's kind of like WordPress is technologically. You know, it's a throwback to choices that were made a long time ago. But in terms of a platform where you have customizability and choices of how you want to make it look, act, work, you get tons and tons of options here. Now, the flip side of that is there's a whole crap ton of work that has to go into this. So there is a huge ecosystem around Magento. There are agencies that do nothing but Magento site development. There are Magento developers that are out there as hired guns with high specialization and high billing rates to go with that. There are large conferences that are specifically around this. So the biggest one is called Magento Imagine. It's run by Magento itself. And all of this is just sort of like a world that I had not had a lot of direct personal experience with. There's a guy that was at Big Snow Tiny Conf last year who ran a Magento email marketing service, which is now a competitor of this thing, but he's now sold that to somebody else. And that was literally the first direct connection I'd ever had in the Magento space. But since then, when I was looking for this here, I was like, oh, wow, all right. Maybe this is something that is scratching all the right itches here. It's something new. I'm excited to learn it. It feels like it's not totally outside of my wheelhouse, but I don't know everything about it yet. So, yeah, there was a lot of stuff that sort of appealed to me about it.
Yeah, so I mean the analogy to me with Magento as it pertains to the other e-commerce providers is sort of like WordPress and the customizability, but you take out a lot of the lower tier, I'll say amateur or hobbyists that WordPress caters to. And it's a very sort of premium, customized solution for e-commerce, it seems. So Shopify fits the sort of plug and play that WordPress does on the lower end, and I mean lower in terms of value, but from a business perspective. And it seems like Magento is the, if you want to build the tricked out custom deal, you go with Magento, right?
Yeah, that's pretty accurate. So WooCommerce is definitely more towards the lower end, self-hosted. I don't have a lot of money to get started. How can I put this all together on sort of a, maybe not necessarily a shoestring budget, but a lower budget, you know, not a 5- and 6-figure budget. Shopify is kind of in the middle where somebody doesn't want to get into all those fiddly details and they're not as technically oriented, but they still want to shop up and quick. So the Shopify kind of helps do that, but it does so at a financial cost. I mean, you have to pay a monthly fee to be on this platform and get all of their stuff. But in terms of the amount of work that you have to do to get your store up and running, Shopify is a lot lower. The cost of that also comes with a lack of customizations that are available. And then Magento definitely fits on the higher tier above them. It's more a Cadillac solution. Shopify is more like the Honda solution, and WooCommerce might be the Kia solution.
No, not to talk trash about anybody's
current ride.
Kia, yeah.
The Kia is the right car for the right person. You know, it's not the right car for everybody, but if you've got that kind of a budget and you need something that's a reliable ride, Kia actually gets pretty good ratings these days. I'm not bashing Kia at all. I think Kia is a great automobile for that. You know, I would seriously consider them as a car for my kids when they get to be 16.
Yeah. Yep.
So,
yep.
Yeah, you know, it just sort of depends on where you're at.
So, okay. So, you know, you mentioned sort of checking a lot of the right boxes for you in terms of sort of growth potential and some good penetration in the market right now. I know you've been looking for a while. We talked about this a bit last week or hinted at it. What was your criteria looking at when you were looking at a new deal from the brokers? What was kind of the initial criteria, and then what really appealed to you about this that made you go for it?
Well, originally, and when I say originally, I mean basically looking about a year to 15 months ago, I was looking for something that I could just purchase and get the hell out of consulting completely. And in order for me to do that, I would have to find something that was SBA eligible, because I just didn't have enough cash to dump into something that could replace my income lock, stock, and barrel. Well, you know, looking at the past 15 months, the number of SBA deals that have come through any broker, I'll throw them all in there because I've been looking at all of them, but in all of the brokers in all of that time, I think I've seen a total of 3-4 SBA deals tops. That's not very many.
Across all business types.
Across SaaS business types, because I was specifically looking at SaaS. I only wanted SaaS. Like there were some FBA by Amazon that were out there, and I think one of those was SBA eligible on QuietLight. I wasn't really looking for Amazon though. So, you know, specifically in my niche of SaaS, I was looking for something that was SBA eligible to just get me out of consulting done. Well, when you've only got 4 choices in 15 months, that sort of sucks. And so probably about three, four months ago, August, September-ish, I had a deep conversation, and it basically occurred to me that I just can't look only in this range here because I'm just going to be stuck in this holding pattern indefinitely. So the next thing was, well, what could I do instead of that? And looking at what I was able to afford, I could afford something with cash that I had on hand and resources that I could tap directly in the low 6 figures. So that changed what I was looking at all of a sudden. And I also realized that in the low 6 figures, the growth potential of those businesses was much more obvious to me than the growth potential of any of the ones that were in the higher 6 figures range that I was looking at before. And that told me a lot about the kind of experience that I had and what kind of a business would fit well with that. Because I think that if you're the right person and you were buying something that was one of those SBA businesses, you probably had experience in that business at perhaps a lower level, but could see growth potential that I wasn't seeing necessarily. Like it was really hard for me to figure out ways I could grow the accounting business that I was looking at, because I wasn't an accountant experienced in that niche at all, and I didn't really understand all the things that they had tapped out. But looking at recapture, I saw that. I saw where they're at. I saw adjacent markets. I saw features that could be added. I understood the competitors. You know, as soon as I went through this, I was sort of like, oh, I could fix that. Oh, I could grow it that way. Oh, I could market this way. Oh, I can go over here. I can expand to this platform and I expand to this platform. Like, I was able to check off all these growth opportunities and go, wow, that's a business that has got some 3 to 5 year potential in it for me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a great point. I mean, I think the concept of buying low versus high, like you said, is different. The different options are right for different people. I think for me, as I look at potentially buying something one day, buying a quote big business is for me riskier than buying a small business, even though the convention would tell you the opposite, because a bigger, more expensive established business is probably more stable. It's also harder to grow and get your money back out of quicker. I think spending, let's just say, $100,000 instead of $300,000 makes more sense for, you know, I'll say people like you and me who are intermediate level business people. And the, like you said, the upside is definitely there, as opposed to a business that's been around for 5 or 10 years and has hundreds of customers. I think that doubling that is really hard.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. So, okay. So, however you want to give a landscape of kind of what the business looks like now. So it's an email marketing solution for Magento. What kind of business is it doing right now?
So I'm not going to talk like hard MRR numbers or anything like that. But I will say that it is in the, it's in the four-figure range right now, and it's growing slowly. It's had organic growth. It's got like a little under 100 active customers in it right now. And of those customers, you know, those are like highly engaged. So there's a very, very reasonable customer lifetime value. And that tells me that, you know, I've got some budget now to actually go out and try to figure out paid acquisition strategies. But I also know from the previous owners some paid acquisition strategies that they tried that just didn't work, not for them. So that was great knowledge to walk in with, because now I don't have to spend the $5,000 that they did to repeat that mistake and then find out that it doesn't work either. So I can try some other stuff right away.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. What, talking about average lifetime value, what were some of the metrics you looked at in general across all the deals, and particularly with this, that appealed to you? So like lifetime value and customer acquisition costs, what were some of the things that you really honed in on and that particularly were good about this that kind of sealed the deal for you?
Yeah, so there was another deal that I was looking at FEI, and I can't reveal the name of it, of course, because I'm under NDA, but it had like a really excruciatingly low lifetime value per customer. It was like $33. And I'm like, wow, what the hell can I do with that? You know, and it was like a product that was really low priced. It was single digit dollars a month. And it was definitely more of a B2C kind of play. And, you know, I'm looking at that budget going, so I'm dealing with a price sensitive customer and I don't have a lot of money to go after new customers. So I've got to find some really cheap organic channels in here, and I'm going to have like huge loads of support to go with this. So that's really going to be implicitly driven in my CAC when I have all this support that's out there. That really goes into your acquisition costs if you have to support all these free people. That's my opinion. If you're gonna measure CAC and you're not including your free support in that because those free customers convert over to paid customers, then you're probably doing CAC costs wrong, in my opinion. But with that said, it's one of those situations where I'm looking and going, even if I grew this to double LTV, that's still just $66. And I'm just trying to figure out how you're going to make a long-term business of this where you're going to get five figures a month in profit out down the line. Like, you just have to get so many customers on that platform. And I'm thinking, this is not the way I want to go, because I'm already on a platform where I'm having to support tons of non-paying customers and dealing with poor reviews, and they're technically not even consumers. You know, this is still a B2B thing with WordPress plugins, but I'm taking a step down into the consumer section of it, and I'm like, yeah, no, that's not going to happen. So when I saw this one with an LTV that was much, much higher and a fairly low CAC, because these guys had tried paid acquisition, but they weren't really getting anything out of it. So where they were getting stuff out of it was more organic word of mouth, referrals, you know, LinkedIn, cold email contacts, stuff that were much lower in acquisition cost. I realized that that was something that was a lot more sustainable in terms of being able to grow the business from where it's at to where I'd like to take it. So those were the kinds of things I was really looking at. It also had really low churn too. So it told me that, you know, it was pretty close to product market fit. The customers that are using it are engaged for a super, super long time. The ones that leave are the ones that usually don't have much volume in their store, so they're just not getting value out of the product. But people who are getting value out of the product are like, oh yeah, I'm good. I'm here. I'm locked and loaded. You're not kicking me out. Because you're getting like a multi-hundred percent return on investment by being on the platform right here if you're getting abandoned cart revenue back.
Yeah, yeah. I love just in general the business model is, you know, what I call like really close to the dollar, right? You are directly affecting their revenue, which is a great place to be. The closer you can get to that, the better.
I am very close to the money here. In fact, I used those words during the transition discussion. You know, they were asking me, why do you want to buy this business? And that was exactly one of my reasons. I'm very close to the money with this business. Those are good places to be. That's a great place to grow from.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And just stepping back a step, so and I'll throw out what I think are decent benchmarks for lifetime value and customer acquisition cost and churn. So lifetime value, a good lifetime value is a few hundred dollars, I would say, for a SaaS business, $200-$400. Mm-hmm. And up is good. Customer acquisition cost, half of lifetime value is kind of what you're shooting for. Is that what you typically go for?
Well, anything that's significantly less than lifetime value is a win in customer acquisition cost. As long as you can find a way to profitably acquire that customer through a paid channel, as long as that's significantly less, you know, 50% is a good, you know, benchmark. But if you can go at 10%, great. If you're still doing it at 75%, there's a margin there. It's still workable. It's just not going to be as fast.
Yeah.
As long as you keep your churn down. Yeah.
So just as an aside, I just signed up this week for ProfitWell. So the Price Intelligently guys, their version of Baremetrics, essentially. Uh-huh. So I sort of hooked it up to Podcast Motor, and interesting to see some of these numbers churn in. I haven't looked at any of this stuff in the past just because we're, I don't know, our business model is slightly different. But it's interesting to start digging into some of this with churn and lifetime value and cohort analysis and stuff. So it's really fascinating. I'll be interested to hear as you get into the business more how you look at that stuff. So lifetime value, customer acquisition cost, and then churn, 5% is a good target? Anything less than that is great?
Depends on the size of the SaaS. Like if you're a larger SaaS, you don't want to be at 5%. You're bleeding customers at 5%. So you want to be closer to like 2%. But if you're smaller, like me, 5-7% is sort of the average range. The good news is I'm below that. So,
and how does the honest question? How does the size of the business affect what is acceptable churn? Why is a bigger business expected to have less churn?
Well, if you think about it, if you're a bigger business, you've had to grow. In order to grow, you've got to have some product market fit, and in order for you to have that product market fit, you're product has to have high engagement, you've got to have lower churn rates, you've got to have more people coming onto your platform. And if you can't keep a customer for more than 6 months as a larger business, you're not going to be able to sustain yourself and grow to, you know, seven figures annual run rate. you've got to be able to retain customers for, you know, 6 to 12 months at a bare minimum. Mm-hmm. So in order to do that, you've got to have a much lower churn rate than a small business where you're still building up customers.
Cool. Yeah, makes total sense. Okay. So the dust has settled a little bit, and the fairy dust is starting to rub off a little on the business?
Well, a little, but not that much. I'm still super excited about it. So for me to look at the next 90 days here, I have a very long to-do list. And in fact, we just went last night in our mastermind and did, you know, our 2017 goals, but we did it a little differently this time. We broke it down by quarter and we beat each other up if it was something very vague. So we created very specific, measurable goals. And so that's basically turned into a laundry list of to-do items for me for the next 3 months, not to mention what I already came up with from the due diligence phase and the transition stuff, because I have just tons and tons of notes in Evernote trying to dig this stuff up. So,
anything that's sort of super urgent or you feel like you need to take care of to keep the business healthy? Or is it all relatively elective and growth stuff?
This is all growth stuff. So the great news is the previous sellers, these are super awesome guys. So the previous sellers of the business, number one, very supportive, very smart. The guy who was the developer, if there was anybody who could be more anal than me about their code base, this is the guy. And because of that, like, his code is super easy to read. It's super organized. It's not well documented, but the way he's written it, the way he's organized it has turned into kind of a documentation from my way of thinking as an engineer. So it's easy for me to sort of look through and say, all right, I need to fix this part of the analytics screen under email collectors. And I can find the views and the controllers and the models all within his code base without referring to any of my notes or the stuff that he provided in the transition or whatever. So that's just beautiful to work with. Absolutely wonderful to work with. On top of all that, like the support burden. So these guys were apologizing about how bad support was this week. Take a guess at the number of requests I've had all week long.
Two.
No, it's a little higher than that. I've had like 10. Huh. Keep in mind, I get like 25 a day for the plugins.
Oof. Okay.
So I'm like, 10, and these guys are like apologizing. Oh man, it's really heavy support burden, and I'm sorry that, you know, this is not normal. And I'm just sitting here kind of quietly laughing, like, this is nothing, guys. This is a joy. If this is my support burden and this is the worst it gets, I'm good to go. So happy here. And, you know, for me, it's just getting up to speed on all the stuff that's going on. Like, they use Intercom for their support, so that's new to me, but it's pretty cool. I like the way that they do it there. They've got multiple tools that are kind of all put together in a chat fashion. So I don't know if you have any experience with Intercom.
Just as a user, not as a owner, yeah.
Yeah, so they've got different products in the back end. There's one that they can use to sort of talk to customers on the website for leads. And then they've got one that's specific for support. And then they've got one that's specific for your in-app stuff to kind of do what you would do in like drip email marketing, for example, if you wanted to do triggered actions when they click something on the app that triggers an email. Intercom's been doing that for ages. And so they've got something that just triggers a little chat bubble to come up and tell you about something. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of cool. I'm learning all of that. And these guys had already done some autoresponders in there, but I found holes where I could go in and engage more deeply or pester the users more persistently. So yeah, I mean, for the most part, operationally, this thing is in great, great shape. You know, that's not a high support burden. The number of customers that are on there is very manageable. It still feels very personable. You know, my number one priority is really to just understand my current customers, like find who are the best ones in there and get to know them on a first name basis. And then the other thing is that I've got several hundred customers that have used the tool in the past but have left. And so my next goal is to like segment those into the paid and the unpaid. And then talk to the ones that were paid and say, why did you leave? Mm-hmm. And talk to the ones that were unpaid and say, so why didn't you end up using the tool? Just to try to get some insights about the audience. So,
yeah, that's fantastic, man. That sounds like a ton of upside potential.
I am super excited about this, and I have to say I've had like the most productive week in the past week. the most productive week that I have had in over a year.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
so
great.
That's huge. That's totally exciting. Yeah. But I'm not the only one that got something new in Shiny for Christmas.
Yeah.
What did you unwrap under your tree, Mr. Hewitt?
Yeah, so it was really funny. I got an email from a sort of friend of the show and of ours, Brad Tunard, on, I guess, last Monday. So this is Wednesday right now. And he said, hey, was just thinking about you when I saw this. This WordPress plugin is for sale by a guy who now works for Automattic. And it's in your space. Thought you might want to check it out. So I checked it out, and the plugin is called Seriously Simple Podcasting. If you go in WordPress.org and type in podcast, it's the first thing that comes up. So it's just like amazing sort of WordPress SEO value. But it is a free plugin with four free add-on modules right now. And it basically allows you to sort of run your podcast entirely from WordPress without the need for an external media host or anywhere to create your podcast feed or anything like that. So like for this show, we use Libsyn to host our media files, and we create our podcast feed in Libsyn. But you don't need to do that necessarily. There's just to decrease the burden on your site, it makes some sense. But plenty of people, based on the fact that this plugin has like 20,000 active installs, plenty of people want to base their podcast through WordPress, which is how actually this show started and how we recommend for a long time our customers at Podcast Motor to do is to base their podcast feed in WordPress. And we used a different plugin with Podcast Motor for basing people's podcast feed in WordPress. But this one does the exact same thing, and it does it a lot more simply. So, so I got in touch with Hugh, who is the guy who developed the plugin, and is a little more difficult than your situation to value what a plugin is worth because it doesn't make any money. But we came to an agreement pretty quickly. He kind of said, hey, this is what I've been told it's worth, and we came to an agreement on the lower end of that range. And for me it represents a lot of potential. Obviously, the fact that it doesn't make any money, it's not doing anything for a bank account right now, but the fact that we can sort of talk to 20,000 active users in the near future is pretty powerful for the Podcast Motor brand, and the opportunities to add on premium modules or a paid version of the plugin are definitely there, and even to I don't say SaaSify it, but to put some sort of recurring revenue model on the back end of it is definitely there. And now the tough thing that I'm envious that you don't have to figure out is exactly what the best way to go is from here.
Yeah, that's always the tough part. I mean, don't get me wrong, right now that roadmap is super clear, but I'm going to easily start whacking through the blazing the easy trail, and then I'm going to hit some choppy forest here pretty soon, and it's not going to be nearly as clear once you get past an initial set of growth hacks that are things that you can apply immediately. So yeah, it's a point that everybody's going to hit in their business. So you just got it a little earlier than everybody else.
Yeah. I mean, I have a lot of ill-conceived businesses, I have a lot of ideas of what I think would be good for it. Add-on modules and things like that. And it really is up to me now to start talking to customers and seeing what they think is really what they're missing and would be the most valuable.
Nice. So were you looking at other podcasting plugins as well? And why did you pick Seriously Simple Podcasting over those?
No, I was not looking. We've talked about it on the show before. Podcast Motor has been relatively on autopilot for a while. So in a sense, this is a really nice way to sort of rejuvenate the business and my, frankly, my sort of interest in growing what we're doing. yeah, I was not looking for something related to this, but this is talking about sort of buying on the lower end. This is definitely buying an opportunity to be a pretty big player in the podcasting technology space, definitely at the lower end of the price spectrum. And I feel like we have enough experience with, God, every possible tool out there with all of our customers to know what's good and what's bad. And if we do decide to build a tool on top of this, I think we've seen the good and the bad and the ugly firsthand from all of them, to where we would hopefully not make too many of the mistakes that other people have made. But no, I wasn't really looking, but, and especially now that we've kind of done the deal and gotten some pretty good PR already from it, it's definitely a great move. If nothing else, it could provide a huge funnel just for our service business. If we do nothing else other than maintain it as a free plugin, I think we'll see an uptick in just the Podcast Motor brand from maintaining what's a great plugin with a lot of exposure.
Nice. And for, a few Benjamins out of your pocket there, that's a nice customer acquisition channel, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if we get, 5 new customers out of it, it'll pay for itself.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's nice.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah. It's great.
So you hinted that the transaction went pretty easily, but can you tell us a little bit more about how it sort of went down? I'm sure it wasn't he sent you an email or you sent him an email and you agreed on a price, within 2 replies or whatever, right? Did you guys do this all over email? Did you actually chat on the phone?
Yeah, no, that's exactly how it went. Yeah, we talked on the phone. We talked on Skype once last week, and just kind of he talked through what the plugin's doing, a little bit about his experience with it and what he's doing. So he works for Automattic, which is the creators of WordPress, or managers of WordPress now, I guess. And they have a non-compete clause that you can't charge for any WordPress-related tools, which is the reason he can't really do much with it other than maintain it as a free plugin. So getting rid of it was kind of in his best interest so he can focus on other things. So yeah, that's the reason he hasn't monetized it to date. But yeah, we had a nice kind of 45-minute talk, and I thought about it for a couple days after that. And then we went back and forth on email, yeah, 3 times, I think, and then settled on a price, and yeah, settled it straight up with PayPal. It was it was pretty easy.
Wow. And you guys had no previous interaction or relationships? This was all a friend of a friend kind of deal, and it all just happened on PayPal, huh?
Yeah, no, it was great. I mean, it's when you Brad and I, from kind of working on Big Snow Tiny Conf together, have developed a pretty good relationship at this point. And so when Brad introduced us and I got on Skype with Hugh, it was pretty obvious he was like a very stand-up guy. We were very frank from the beginning, and I think from that it was easy for me to be able to say this is an easy way to make a transaction, and it's gone very smooth. I mean, we're not quite done transferring everything just yet. But yeah, I can't be happier. He's wrote a very nice blog post, which got picked up by PostStatus, which, Dave, is the big kind of paid WordPress newsletter that goes out, a couple times a week?
Yeah, if I hadn't talked to you earlier about it, I would not have known about the deal until that PostStatus email came out, because I'm a PostStatus member. And sure enough, one day it shows up and I see the word Craig Hewitt in there. And I'm like, how, what?
What the fuck?
Yeah, I knew you had mentioned the podcasting plugin. I just didn't realize, A, it was going to happen that fast, and B, it would be that publicly announced. So, yeah, congratulations, man.
Yeah, so it's great. It's great. I mean, I think the deal was very easy. I think coming up with a value is tough, but I'm very happy with the number we came up with. And now it's really figuring out the best way to monetize it. And I think the way I think about like creating a show on WordPress, the things that make the most sense are things that make it, look good and make it easy to get started. The plugin already solves the easy part very well. But we could do some things with styling and making a site really look neat, I think pretty easily. And so that's probably one place we're going to look. But then the other place that has some real legs is, if you look at podcast hostings, a lot of the solutions are I'll say independent, you know, so like Libsyn or SoundCloud or Simplecast or their own standalone solution. But the one that is really heavily integrated into WordPress is called Blueberry. And it basically is, you know, you write your blog post in WordPress and then you upload the file from the WordPress post editor and it gets sent to the Blueberry servers, right? This, what we have with Seriously Simple Podcasting, gives us the same functionality really easily. We just have to put a little button in there and hook it up to an S3 server somewhere to give us what is essentially probably the second or third biggest podcast hosting provider out there and give technology that's on par with what they have. So that's,
yeah, and you could totally do that as a paid add-on, super easy.
Yeah. Yeah. So we could either say, you know, it's $100 one time or $100 a year or something like that.
The latter.
Yeah, $100. But I mean, that's on par with what other podcast hosting companies are charging. And sure, technologically, you can't convince me it would take a ton of time to do. So offloading, downloading these giant, you know, 50 megabyte MP3 files from your web server is pretty important for a lot of people. And anybody who's not doing it probably should. And this would be a great way to give that option to 20,000 users. So,
yeah. Yeah. That's huge.
Yeah. Yeah. So if I had to guess, that's probably the way we're going to go, but I need to do some pretty serious validation of it and what it would take technically to build it and time and money. And then, you know, is there a quicker, easier win to be had, along the way? And what would that look like? So
nice. So what's your 90-day plan?
The 90-day plan is getting into understanding support first and foremost. So the plugin has 99 five-star reviews in WordPress.org. And so that's a huge asset, and keeping that as high as possible is job number one. Since we don't have any paid support right now, it's just keeping all those WordPress.org users happy. So finding a developer to sort of maintain things and make some incremental improvements will be job number two, just after the first of the year. I have a good lead on somebody that Hugh recommended. Coincidentally, I think we'll be working through Codable. So Codable.io. I don't know if you're familiar with it.
I am. It's in one of my code snippets when somebody comes to me and asks for help with CSS or custom development. You know, I have a list of three things. WP Curve is number one, Codable is number two, and then hiring a developer on Upwork is number three.
Yeah. So it's a little more expensive. It's in the $50+ an hour range. But I don't know, my experience typically has been, for the most part, you get what you pay for with developers. So I'd be, especially with a fixed scope, be happy to pay a little more to know that it gets done and get done right in a timely manner, especially for, you know, updating the plugin every 3 weeks or something like that.
Right. And Codable has a great reputation for WordPress developers. You know, I've been recommending it for a long time based on other people that I trust who also recommend it. So, and nobody's been saying anything bad about it that I'm aware of lately. And I still see it pop up on the WordPress Slack channel and the Post Status Slack channel, people trying to interview to work there. So yeah, there's all kinds of good things about Codable.io. I think you're in the right place for that. Good job, man.
Yeah. Yeah. If nothing else, I don't have to figure that out, right? I think we have a lead on a developer that Hugh is familiar with, and he works through Codable, so all that is very good. The one thing that I have to figure out is really how this fits in with Podcast Motor as a company and as a brand. And I, to be honest, I don't know what that is right now. So this has a potential to be a pretty good business, I think, by itself. I think having it aligned with Podcast Motor makes a lot of sense, but how I split my time and focus and marketing and development and dollars and all this kind of stuff is something I'm working out. It's this very much kind of landed in my lap. I think it's a great opportunity, but I also have some stuff to figure out. So that's the, it's definitely the stuff I'm not sure of, but I know it's a good opportunity. I just have to figure out the best way to go.
Nice. Yeah, the best opportunities are the ones that end up landing in your lap just because you happen to be in the right space at the right time with the right skills, and you're just kind of ready for something. And it just, boom, pops up, and you're like, I can do this. I can totally do this. Yeah. So that's great to hear. It's great to hear.
Yeah, I think so. Speaking of being in the right place at the right time, I have another sort of first that happened in the last couple of weeks. So I got invited to speak at a conference for the first time. So I'm going to be speaking at FemtoConf, which is Christoph Engelhardt is putting on a conference just outside of Frankfurt in February. So just after Big Snow Tiny Conf Europe, I'll be going up to speak on podcast motor and productized services. So it'll be fun to give my first speaking gig in our little world. And particularly interesting from a topical standpoint to be talking about productized services, especially with, you know, Seriously Simple Podcasting and what may have come by, you know, the middle of February. It could be a very different business model by then. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes. But I'm really excited to give a talk. I'm already sort of preparing stuff, and it'll be many hours, you know, preparing and rehearsing because I want to do good my first time, you know.
Oh yeah. And we'll link to that in the show notes if you are interested in attending. Christoph and Benedict are definitely putting on what is going to be a super cool conference. So if you're anywhere in the area around Frankfurt, check out their link in the show notes below and sign up to attend. I think it's going to be a great time. And, you know, when I gave him total guff on Twitter for using the Femto prefix here, which is much, much smaller than a micro. But the whole point was that they wanted to come up with something that was kind of on par with a fractional size of MicroConf, where they could get like-minded entrepreneurs in a room, give some talks, and just get that same kind of vibe of MicroConf, but on a smaller scale and in Europe during the off season. So yeah, if you're in the area, definitely attend.
Yep. I think they're sold out, but they were talking about potentially releasing some additional tickets. But yeah, they have a waiting list, so definitely sign up for the waiting list. If not for this year, for next year, because it sounds like they'll definitely be doing it again. They sold out for the original book of tickets pretty quick, I think. So story of
Nice. I didn't even know that. That's great.
Great for them. So. Well, man, I have to say I'm very excited for you. I know you have some exciting times coming with Recapture, and I can't wait as a listener of podcasts to hear your stories in the next coming weeks to see what the business sort of really turns out to be like, and then how you grow it over the next, you know, months and years. I'm happy for you, and I'm excited to hear how it goes.
Thanks, man. Likewise, I can't wait to see how Seriously Simple Podcasting turns into a monetized channel here, whether that's more podcast motor customers or premium add-ons, which is a model near and dear to my WordPress heart, and just to see how that all unfolds in light of this very fortuitous sale. So congratulations.
Yeah, man. Thanks. Thanks. Yeah. So if you guys, you know, if you loved the episode today, would really appreciate a review. We've been steadily getting reviews each week. So would love to sort of kick that up a notch, if you will. Leave us a review in iTunes. And if you have a comment on the episode today, drop us a note in the show notes for this episode. And we'll talk to you next time.
And that's our episode for this week. If you have any questions or comments, please let us know at podcast@roguestartups.com. Subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Rogue Startups. And be sure to visit roguestartups.com for full show notes on each episode. If you're enjoying the show, we'd sure appreciate a review in iTunes. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.